Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Seth Bertelny spent a decade at Goal.com before becoming the managing editor at USA Today's Pro Soccer Wire. Today, we dive deep into the recent abuse allegations in women's soccer. So come along on that journey with us today on It's Called Soccer. Seth Bertelny from the Pro Soccer Wire joins us today on It's Called Soccer. Seth, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, of course. So most of the time I have people from Twitter or other YouTubers come on to interview about the U.S. men's national team or U.S. soccer in general. I thought it'd be really great to get an actual journalist on here to talk about some of the things happening within the U.S. Soccer Federation today. But I kind of wanted to start at step one. You've been covering soccer since publications really started their push to capture the American audience. You were at Goal.com for a while. What have you seen in the coverage landscape change and also in the fan landscape over the last few years?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I think that catering towards the American soccer fan can be challenging because the American soccer fan, as it is, can be interested in so many different things, you know, whether it's just European stuff, or whether it's just domestic stuff, or whether it's a little bit of both, or whether it's just men's stuff, or whether it's just women's stuff, or a little bit of both. So, you know, we face a unique challenge sometimes, I feel like, in the American soccer media, because the American soccer fan can be so wildly different from a different American soccer fan. And so I think you just kind of have to follow where the audience tells you to go. I think that we have enough stuff going on domestically to fill up multiple websites. But I also think sometimes you can't lose track of the fact that there are people that, you know, don't really follow our domestic leagues and don't follow our domestic teams. And so I think that making sure that you cater to a wide audience is important.
Do you have an origin story of kind of the team or league that you really started to fall in love with and got you interested in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I was always a soccer player. I think like a lot of kids growing up in this country, you know, we played soccer, played youth soccer, and maybe weren't so aware of the fact that there actually was professional soccer and there was a higher level that you could follow on television. And, you know, this was during the kind of early days of more widespread availability of soccer on TV. And so, you know, when I started playing soccer and getting a little bit older and realizing I could watch games from the Premier League on Fox Sports World, shout out to anyone who remembers that channel. And I think that's what sort of got me more into soccer as a fan, and not just as a hobby that I did on the weekends. And so, you know, I think the explosion of popularity of soccer in our country really follows with the explosion of availability on television, you know, early 2000s into the 2010s with more games available from Europe, more international games, to where we are now, where, you know, on a given weekend, you can spend your entire day watching European soccer from morning until late afternoon and watch games from leagues all over the world, not just Europe, South America, international games. And so I think for me, it just kind of followed with the availability of soccer on television and realizing that I was also a fan of the sport. It wasn't just a sport that I played for fun on the weekends.
Yeah. And then how did you get into covering the game?
Football is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all of your football betting needs this season. You'll find the latest odds, matchup info, player news, and game trends. And as your continued source for all sports wagering info, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports and events like MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, golf, and even the best sport in the world, soccer. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. Please remember to gamble responsibly.
So I started off as a volunteer at Goal in the late 2000s, like 2009, 2010. I wrote for the website, and eventually I started working there as an editor on a part-time basis. And then eventually I started covering soccer there on a full-time basis as an editor. And, you know, while I was at Goal, my role changed a little bit here and there, but kind of the base of responsibilities that I had remained the same, which was being an editor on the website and writing about soccer all over the world. But specifically, over the last couple years of my time at Goal, my beat was more American women's soccer. I covered the US women's team and WSL. And so I ended up being at Goal for around 10 years until I got this job at Pro Soccer Wire earlier this year, which I'm really excited about because, you know, it's a chance to be part of something from the ground floor, to be a part of something new, to have a little bit more influence in shaping the direction that the site goes. And also just having a company like Gannett behind it that really has shown that it's willing to invest in American soccer coverage. I think it's really exciting.
Do you feel a weight of responsibility now being the managing editor for a network that, so it's owned by USA Today, is that right? So it seems like there's a lot of weight that you carry by being the managing editor of this publication.
Yeah, like I said, I see it as a real opportunity to kind of shape the coverage of a new site. You know, I think you can view it as a responsibility. I like to view it as an opportunity because you're right that the name USA Today carries some weight. You know, we have USA Today in our URL. We're part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. But I also want to be our own entity. You know, I want to create our own voice. You know, USA Today covers soccer too. And we are part of the same family, but we have kind of our own unique niche that I'm looking to fill. So I think it's really exciting to see a company like Gannett, the parent company of USA Today, say that they want to invest more in American soccer coverage. And I'm just excited to see where we can take this. I hope that over the next year or two, you know, we can grow our imprint on the game and grow our staff and become a well-known name out there in the American soccer media landscape.
Awesome. Well, I hope all of our viewers today go out and check out the website and see some of the awesome articles that are coming out. And I feel like I just wanted to take this opportunity because there is some really big stories happening within U.S. soccer right now, specifically within the Federation and NWSL with the Sally Yates independent report on some abuses in women's soccer. So Seth, can you just help us break down what is currently happening within the Soccer Federation and NWSL because of this independent report?
Yeah, there really has been a big fallout from this report just over the last few days. You know, the reaction to the report, I think in general, it's been shock, but not surprise because we've known about some of these really dark elements within the women's game for the last year, but seeing it spelled out the way that it was, seeing the kind of dereliction of duty among so many officials and executives and owners within the game has been, you know, really troubling to see kind of broken down in such a systematic way that Sally Yates did. And there were also new revelations, specifically about Christy Hawley. We didn't know much about why he was fired by Racing Louisville. And now we know some pretty horrifying details there, but you're right. There has been a real kind of swift reaction. We've seen a few sponsors put out some statements saying that they're, viewing the events that follow very skeptically and wondering whether they're going to continue their sponsorship of the game or specific teams. The real fallout has been in Portland, where Merritt Paulson, the owner, said he was going to take a step back from running the team. Also, their director of business, Mike Golub, and their president of soccer, Gavin Wilkinson, took a step back with him. But then a day later, we saw kind of a reversal where Wilkinson and Golub were actually fired. So it was kind of an interesting 24 hours there where, there was a decision taken for all three of them to step back. And then quickly they, not sure why, but decided that there needed to be more done. I think that folks in Portland have been calling for big changes for a long time and specifically Wilkinson to lose his job and Golub as well. And so, that was the start. I don't think it's the end because there are plenty who've been calling for Paulson to sell the team as well. It is kind of interesting to think about what the thought process was behind the initial statement followed by the reversal 24 hours later in terms of who's making decisions and why those decisions were made. But certainly a lot of the fan base in Portland were calling for Wilkinson and Golub to be let go a long time ago. This dates back to the original Athletic article from a year ago, where it was clear that Wilkinson didn't do enough to, kind of prevent Paul Riley from getting another job within the league. Golub has been accused of kind of fostering a toxic environment. But then there were more details in the Yates report of all three of their roles in terms of how Paul Riley got shuffled between their organization and the organization that became the North Carolina Courage. I don't think that a lot of people are going to be fully satisfied by Wilkinson and Gall being fired. I think they're going to view it as a first step, but for a long time now, there have been calls for Paulson to sell the team, not the least of which was Megan Rapinoe in the press conference before the U.S.-England game, saying that she didn't think Paulson was fit to be an owner in the NWSL anymore. And, of course, it's also complicated by the fact that Paulson owns the Portland Timbers in MLS as well. So he would have to sell both teams probably if he were to kind of exit the space, and it's unclear if he's going to do so. There's also been some fallout in Chicago, where the owner Arnim Whistler in the Yates report was shown to have kind of dismissed or ignore complaints about the former Red Stars coach Rory Dames. I think one of the quotes attributed to Whistler was, "It was just Rory being Rory," which in hindsight is pretty gross based on the things we now know that Dames is accused of. The Red Stars board of directors actually ousted Whistler from his position as chairman of the board this week, which is significant, but at the same time does not mean that he isn't the owner of the team anymore. It does not mean that he's being forced to sell. So I think the future of Whistler and Paulson is going to be one of the major storylines to follow from the fallout of the Yates report.
Yeah, and you mentioned Megan Rapinoe, some of her comments before the women's national team kicks off against England later today. The players, not just Rapinoe, have been outspoken on their horror and, like you said, not necessarily surprised on the findings. So pair that with the excitement and the sellout crowd of 90,000 at Wembley that the U.S. women's national team will play in front of. They're the number one team in the world right now, playing the Euros champion. So what do you think is the environment and the vibe within the U.S. women's national team right now?
Yeah, it's a really strange juxtaposition of emotions, I'm sure. And the national team players that have spoken to the media about it have kind of talked about how, you know, this is going to be such a big occasion. Sellout crowd, the tickets sold out in about 24 hours. It's going to be, I believe, the second largest crowd the U.S. women's national team has ever played in front of, only trailing the 99 final at the Rose Bowl. So this is a big moment, and it should be a celebration. But because of everything that was revealed in the Yates report, it's hard to feel like celebrating right now. And so I think that the U.S. players are going to really try to put everything aside once they get on the field and focus on the game and focus on the moment and try to find some joy in this, because it's really an indication of how far the women's game has come that an occasion like this can take place. But of course, earlier this week, we saw how far the women's game still has to go because of the people that have been involved and still are involved in leadership roles that have failed the players on so many levels over such a long period of time. So it'll be a big moment, and it should be a great game, but it won't exactly be the celebratory occasion that maybe we were expecting a week ago.
Yeah, I guess in the short and medium term for the NWSL and the US Soccer Federation, do you think there will be any major changes to how things work?
Well, I think the one thing that we need to sort of wait on is the conclusion of the joint investigation between the NWSL and the NWSL Players Association. They are covering a lot of the same territory as the Yates investigation, but you know, they're going to probably have some revelations that weren't in the Yates investigation. And because this is actually run by the league, I think that some of its findings might be a little bit harder to ignore in terms of making changes on the league level. Because the thing about the Yates investigation is it found a lot of information, but it didn't have any sort of power to enforce rules or change rules. It was just something that ended with recommendations. Whereas this NWSL investigation, this is the league itself doing it. And so I think once that is completed, which should be in the next month or so, then we can really start to think about what sort of recommendations it comes up with and what sort of changes that we'll see. I think that the Yates report did come up with a lot of recommendations and ideas that will be implemented. I think the league investigation will come up with some different ones, and maybe there will be some overlap too as far as what they recommend. But certainly there are some real concrete steps that can and I think will be taken to avoid similar situations like this happening. And I think it's important to emphasize that this is not something that only happened in the NWSL. This is a culture that begins at the youth level, where it's a little bit harder to enforce rules and recommendations, just because there are millions and millions of kids playing youth soccer all across the U.S. And so I think it has to be a top-down approach, but I also think the ideas that come out of these investigations, as best as they can, really need to be transmitted to the grassroots level.
Yeah, I guess in some lighter news there, the other national team is taking on the World Cup in November in Qatar. So just to switch over to the men's team for a moment, in your opinion, was the September camp a result of some of Greg's struggles on the coaching side, or was it due more to having so many injuries and players out of form with the U.S. men's national team?
Yes.
Elaborate.
I think what the September window showed us was there are certain players that are just fundamental to the U.S.'s success and just can't be replaced easily. Three of them that really stuck out for me were Anthony Robinson, Yunus Musa, and Tim Weah. I think without those three players, the U.S. doesn't function nearly as well as we saw. At the same time, you can't absolve Berhalter of blame. And I think that, you know, his stock as the U.S. coach has been up and down during his tenure, but right now, about 6 weeks before the World Cup, it's at a pretty low level, because it just seems like there are some fundamental problems with how this team wants to play, with how this team wants to attack, that haven't been solved. And I think there are some issues that were forced by injuries, but other issues, I don't think you can necessarily explain away as easily. Just like, why can't they beat a press better? Why can't their best players seem to show up in these games that are their friendlies, but they matter because they're so close to the World Cup? Why haven't we found a solution at striker? Why haven't we found a solution at center back next to Walker Zimmerman? You know, part of it's personnel, but part of it just kind of seems to be down to Berhalter. And, you know, the big question with him is his emphasis on system over personnel the right way to go? Given that this is a national team that isn't together very often and might need to actually have a system fitted around the players that it has, rather than exclude players that could help the team because they don't fit the system.
Do you ever find it difficult to remove your kind of natural optimism or pessimism towards a player or a coach in reporting on those players and coaches?
Sometimes, yeah. I think, you know, I think there's certain players, like, for example, Christian Pulisic. It's been hard in his career, just as somebody who cares about American soccer, to not want him to succeed, because he, you know, since the moment that he came up with Dortmund, has been kind of the standard bearer for Americans playing abroad and kind of reached these heights that we had never really seen, as American soccer fans, at least in a really long time, just in terms of somebody playing at such a big club and such big games at such a young age. And, you know, there was this sense that he was kind of carrying the torch for what an American could be in terms of reaching these heights in Europe. And over the last few years, we've seen other players join him, at these high levels, but, you know, putting all objectivity aside, I am someone who cares about American soccer and wants American soccer to reach as high level as possible and succeed as much as possible for so many different reasons. And so, yeah, I think, you know, following someone like his career, sometimes you do kind of want to give him that extra little push and hope that he succeeds, because, you know, he's represented so much more than just himself.
What if he reads one of your articles that are optimistic about him, and that helps push him into his next game. You could be the reason.
I mean, I hope that Christian Pulisic is a regular Pro Soccer Wire reader. I sort of doubt it. But, you know, Christian, if you want to come to our site and check out our stuff, we've got a lot of great stuff. It's not just about you. It's about all kinds of American soccer. So, you know, we'll be happy to have you as a reader.
Awesome. Well, Christian Pulisic is something to look forward to in the World Cup. Also, something to look forward to is Ian Dark is back commentating on some US games, and I'm hoping for some legendary commentary there. What are you most looking forward to at this World Cup?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if they actually put Ian Dark on the US games, because he's not part of their top announcing duo, and usually they save the marquee games for them. So I think it might be.
Do you think we'll have Chad Johnson instead?
I hope. Let's just, you know what? Let's not even have a commentary duo. Like, let's just put Chad Johnson alone to call US games. I think that would be the ideal way for this to work. But yeah, I think, yeah, we'll probably see John Strong and Stu Holden cover the US games. But I mean, you know, there's a lot to look forward to at this World Cup, you know, just beyond the US. I think it'll be really interesting from a regional perspective to see how Canada does. You know, they've been kind of a sleeping giant in our region for a really long time, and they seem to have finally woken up over the last year or two. So see how Canada gets along with their first World Cup since 1986. Mexico, you know, forever in search of that fifth game. I think it's been like four, maybe even five consecutive World Cups now where they've gone out in the round of 16. So they've been kind of looking to see if they can get over that hurdle. And then, you know, on a bigger level, I think, you know, one of the big storylines is it's kind of the last dance for two of the all-time greats, Ronaldo and Messi. You know, Messi has announced that it's going to be his final World Cup. I mean, I can't imagine that Ronaldo is going to play another World Cup considering he's 37. You know, both of those players have won their confederations championships with the Euros and Copa America, but neither of them has a World Cup. So seeing if they could sign off with the World Cup is going to be, you know, a big storyline to follow.
Is Argentina going to be the winner? Are you going for the good news story for Lionel Messi?
I mean, it would be poetic, and it does seem like if you had to pick three or four favorites, Argentina and Brazil would be definitely among that group. I think a lot of the European teams are talented but flawed, whereas Argentina and Brazil are both, you know, playing at a really high level and don't seem to have a whole lot of weaknesses and are coming right into form right at the perfect time. But at the same time, you know, you get into a knockout format and anything can happen over one game. So it's hard to pick a favorite, but certainly Argentina and Brazil are two of the teams that I would be expecting to go far in this tournament.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Seth, for telling me, thank you so much for joining us on the It's Called Soccer channel. Bring us home with your last word. What do you want to say to the people on this channel?
Well, I want to say that I like the name of your podcast because it is called Soccer in the end. I'm happy to have so much support of so many American soccer fans who've been visiting our site and visiting other sites, and I'm looking forward to the first World Cup in 8 years with the U.S. men, and we'll go right into another Women's World Cup in 6 months, and so it's exciting times for American soccer.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, everyone watching. Please go check out Pro Soccer Wire. We'll see you next time on It's Called Soccer.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Lefoot.
And he stole our crunch!
Quick, the zip line!
He's getting away!
Throw our last crunch berry!
No!
No one steals my crunch berries!
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch!
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.